I'm Sarah Conahan, Director of Community and Philanthropy at Suffolk Construction, and I'm really honored and excited to be here today. I feel fortunate to represent Suffolk Construction. While construction has typically been known as a male-dominated industry, now more than ever, equal opportunities for leadership and growth are available for women. Our CEO, John Fish, always says, "We don't just build buildings, we build people." And part of the way in which we do that is through our internal culture and community, and our commitment to the communities in which we work and live. One example of this is through the Suffolk Women's Network, which provides networking and learning opportunities to the women across the entire company, many of whom are here today. I'm proud to be here to represent the forward-thinking women at Suffolk and our commitment to creating opportunities for growth and leadership across all industries. I'm also excited to moderate this breakout session, Negotiating at Work, Turning Small Wins into Big Gains, and to introduce our amazing mother-daughter duo here today. Dr. Deborah Kolb is the Deloitte Ellen Gabrielle Professor for Women and Leadership and co-founder of the Ford Foundation Center for Gender in Organizations at the Simmons School of Management. Kolb served as executive director of the Program on Negotiation at Harvard Law School, where she currently co-directs Negotiations in the Workplace Project. She is an author of several books on this very topic. She's been recognized by Time Magazine and Harvard Business Review. And she is the mother of Elizabeth Robard, Elizabeth Kolb Robard.
Robiard.
We spent some time on the name. Who has spent her career in tech startups. She is currently the Vice President of Business Development and Operations at Litex. She is a mentor to technology startup CEOs and entrepreneurs through several incubators and accelerators, and she's grown up with negotiation in her DNA. And with that, I'll turn it over.
Okay.
All right, thank you so much. All right. It's true. So this is my mother, and I did grow up with her negotiation stories and all the women she'd met and worked with and consulted with at different businesses, sort of sharing their stories about negotiating at work. And it did, I sort of grew up with negotiation in my breakfast cereal. And so I work in a very male-dominated field. You've probably heard that technology is filled with programmers. And I work with a ton of programmers, and throughout my career, as I've navigated these sort of male-dominated workplaces, I've leaned a lot on her books, her teachings, her stories to navigate my career. Elizabeth Kolb Robiard. So what we're going to talk about today is how you can use negotiation to navigate your own career and get what you want at work. So why is that so important? It's important because women, obviously, they struggle at work, and they sometimes choose to opt out because of these struggles, or they don't get where they want to go in their career because they're sort of hitting certain walls. And so this is a recent research study by a human resources firm. The top five reasons why younger women, women 5 to 10 years out of college, leave their jobs. And so I just want to walk you through these reasons really quickly and think if some of these resonate with you. So the first reason is work and personal life are out of balance, right? I think a lot of us feel that, and I want more flexibility. The second most common reason young women leave their jobs, we're starting a family, and I need, I want to spend more time with them. Right? That happens a lot to some of us. The third reason is there are not enough opportunities for learning and development for me, so I don't maybe see a path to growth or my next career job here at this company, or maybe even in this industry, which I think happens a lot. Four, there's not enough balance, fair balance, between how hard I work and my compensation, essentially. So pay, right? I'm not being paid what I'm worth. Perhaps I haven't been able to receive the salary performance reviews or bonuses that I hope for or that I think I'm worth, right? And then five, there are no senior role models here that resonate with me. So, right, there's not a lot of women in leadership positions either at this company or in this industry. And I think some of the most recent research, only 4% of Fortune 500 CEOs are women, right? So if you work in these industries, where they're traditionally male-dominated, or at least the top level is male-dominated, it's sort of hard to see yourself staying and growing with that company, right? So these are really important reasons why women leave their jobs, sometimes leave their careers or their industries altogether. So why did I put this up? It's kind of a downer to start this session with. It's because our belief is that these are all negotiable, that you can negotiate for different outcomes for each of these barriers, but you have to start that negotiation, and you're sort of in charge of that negotiation. But they are all negotiable. So let's really quickly kind of take a pulse of this room. I'm so happy to see so many women here. It's like just amazing to be up here and see all these women. So maybe a show of hands. How many of you have felt like you've struggled to integrate either work and family or just life and work? Show of hands. And maybe wanted flex time, right? So that, in our belief, is completely negotiable. You can negotiate for flex time, different work arrangements. You should be trying to negotiate for those. A lot of you had your hand raised. Show of hands here. How many of you feel like you're not considered for jobs that you believe you're qualified for, you have the skills for, but you're not either considered for that promotion or that role or that next job, but you feel qualified for? So not as many of you. It's interesting. I think some of us hold ourselves back a little bit. We don't believe we're ready. And some of our male colleagues believe they're really, really ready, even if maybe we're more ready, right? So that was interesting, because if you were up here, you would have seen very few people raise their hand, and I bet you are more qualified than you give yourself credit. How many of you feel, again, show of hands, that you're asked to do extra work, right? Plan the party, take the notes, run out for coffee. Wait, hold them up again, one more second. It's called women's work at work, right? Okay, I think we all feel that, and again, this is totally negotiable. This is invisible work, right? They don't give you credit for doing it. You're often, sometimes you even volunteer for it. You say yes a lot to it. This is absolutely something that you need to learn to negotiate so that either you don't always have to do it or that it becomes part of your job if it's something that you're interested in doing, okay? And finally, I think a lot of us feel like we're undervalued at work. I think it's a common feeling that we're not recognized. We're not valued at work. And for us, we really believe, performance doesn't speak for itself. You really have to advocate for yourself to position yourself for that next salary raise, that next promotion, that next career step. And it is up to you, and a lot of women don't do this. So I think we've all sort of felt these things. And so today, what we want to do is go over sort of three techniques that you can use to more successfully advocate and negotiate for yourself at work. We're going to talk about how to get negotiations off the ground, and I think this is a huge barrier for women. They don't want to start that conversation. Two, how to negotiate or navigate to a positive outcome, because you want something that's good for you that is also good for your boss or your organization. And finally, sort of expecting resistance and how to deal with it. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to my talented mother.
Okay. We're going to talk about how to get negotiations off the ground. This is a little cartoon. I'm here to talk about resources for my project, and the person is saying, yeah, later. So one of the issues about getting negotiations going in the workplace, there's not a formal structure for it. And so people might say, yeah, I'm happy to meet with you and talk about it, but I'm busy now. Let's postpone it. Or you get into the meeting and it's sort of like this, right, where somebody takes over and dominates, you're ready to talk about some opportunity that you want and somebody takes over the conversation. So I want to talk about getting negotiations off the ground, and I want to talk about three principles that are important. The first one is recognizing how you get in your own way. And I want to tell you some stories about me and some other people. I like to use stories in these. So the first one is about when I was at the program on negotiation. The first thing I want to talk about is recognizing opportunities to negotiate, because I think that's where we often fall down. So I was at the program on negotiation. I was the associate director. I was the only woman on the faculty. And it really wasn't a job I liked. It was great for my career, but I had a big Ford Foundation grant to go back to Simmons and run the Center for Gender and Organizations. So I didn't want to become the executive director. So the head of the steering committee, this wonderful man named Howard Rafa, who recently passed away, came into my office and he said to me, Debbie, they call me Debbie, we want you to be the executive director. And no, it's coming out of my mouth. He says, do not say no. He said to me, ask yourself at what price you would do this job. And he didn't need money, because they were just buying me out of my Simmons salary. He wanted me to think about what would make me say yes. And that has become a really touchstone for me. I always say, anytime anybody asks you to do something, it's always yes and. Yes, and here's what I need. So you convert any ask into a negotiation. And I've used that so much, and people say to me, that is one of the most important things that I learned. And I always credit Howard Rafa. I'm going to write a little piece on it about him for that. The second way we get in our own way is we make the first concession in our head. Oh, I'll ask for this. No, I won't get this, so I'll just ask for this. I work in a lot of women's leadership programs, and I work with a colleague, and she runs all the coaching. And I say to her, how many days do we need when we're writing the contract? She said, I think we need 5, but I'm only going to ask for 4. The problem is, Henry Kissinger always says, your opening offer is as good as it's ever going to get, and if you make that first concession in your head, you've denied the person the opportunity to respond to it. So the second thing is making the first concession in our head. And the third thing is, I think we often think that negotiations signal conflict. I think negotiation in the workplace is a way to solve problems. So let me just tell you a little story about conflict. It's very dry up here. A mother calls her son down to go to school, and he doesn't come. So she goes upstairs and she knocks on the door, and she says, it's time to go to school. And he says, I'm not going to school. And she says, you give me 3 good reasons why you're not going to school. He said, I hate school, I hate the teachers, and I hate the students. And she says, I'm going to give you 3 good reasons why you are going to school. I'm your mother, you're 48 years old, and you're the dean of the law school. You know, so when there's something that we perceive as conflictual, we tend to shy away from it. So if you think of negotiation as problem solving, you're much more likely to address it. So the second thing is I want to talk about is assessing your value in a currency that has value to the person you're dealing with. People negotiate with you because you have something they want. Elizabeth said, you know, performance doesn't speak for itself. I always like to say, if you're doing a good job, nobody knows. You have to find ways to make your accomplishments visible on an ongoing basis. I was talking to a woman who's an executive at a bank, and she said, you know, I bring in a new customer. I know the head of my division wants to know about this. I send him an email and said, we just brought in a new customer. So he knows what I've accomplished. And she said, when I've cut costs, I know the CFO is interesting. I shoot her an email and say, listen to the costs we cut. So I think, you know, we have this sense that we don't want to toot our own horn, but there are ways to make your value visible in an ongoing way, and you need to do it so that when it comes time for the ask, people appreciate your value. And I always like to say, it has to be in a currency that has value to the person you're dealing with. I always used to tell my students, if your team is doing a great job, the chief financial officer doesn't care. She cares about something else. So it's really important to make your value visible in that currency. But then it's also important, when you're starting a negotiation, to make your value visible in the moment. So I have 2 stories I want to tell you about that. One of it is a station manager here at a local TV station. She's to negotiate with the station manager. He had a reputation of being a really tough negotiator. And you'd go into his office, and he would sit you on a couch where you would sink, and he'd be behind a desk. So the first thing she did was she brought in a stool. She was up. And then she arranged the meeting so that people were knocking on the door and asking her questions about the 6 o'clock news. So she made her value visible in a currency that has value. One of the women that I was dealing with, she was a senior vice president. I do a lot of work with senior leaders of business development. And she wanted to negotiate an alternative work schedule. So the first thing that she comes in to meet with the CEO, she says, let me tell you about the new business we just developed. So she makes her value visible in a currency that has value to him. So it's really important to think about in the moment how you do that. The second thing is what I call the iron fist in the velvet glove. And the idea here is thinking about the leverage that you have. So your leverage is based on your alternatives outside the negotiation. If you have a good alternative, something else you can do, for example, if you're applying for a job, if you have another job offer, you have leverage because it means that you have another choice that you can compare it to. And when you have an alternative, it gives you a sense of what's defensible to ask. So it's important to think about what your alternative is, but it's also important to think about what their alternatives are. They may be worse than yours. I do some work with pharmaceutical companies, and I tell, I was doing a little workshop, and this woman said, her boss asked her to do a piece of work she didn't want to do, some invisible work, and she said she felt she had to say yes, because if she didn't say yes, he would ask somebody else. And I said to her, do you think the reason he asked you is because he stumbled over your cubby first? There's a reason he asked you. You had a value, so he asked you because of that. That's your leverage. So if you think about your alternatives, how do you get those alternatives into the negotiation? And I talk about it in three ways. One is to mention the alternative, but to say you're not pursuing it. So this business development woman I told you about, she said to her CEO, you know, I've been getting a lot of calls from headhunters, but I'm not interested in taking the jobs. Right? So she lets him know her value, but she says, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. That's one way to smooth out your alternative. A second is to use questions. Ask, what would happen if I did this? A consultant that I know, she and her husband were negotiating a change schedule, and she was going to go on a normal consulting schedule, just working 80 hours a week. And she'd worked out everything with her managing partner. But when it came time to close the deal, they couldn't close the deal. And so she said to him, you know, I'm going to go on this alternative schedule in a month. How are you going to handle this when I do that? So she let her alternative, what her alternative was, but she did it in a question. And finally, a very important principle is how you connect what's good for you to what's good for the organization. And my favorite story about that comes from Lean In, Sheryl Sandberg. And she talks about negotiating with Mark Zuckerberg over her position of COO. And he gave her an offer. She went home. Her brother-in-law said, no man would ever accept this offer. And so she went back and she said to him, you know, I'm going to be negotiating for Facebook. And you want to know I'm a good negotiator. And this is the only time I'm going to be sitting at the opposite side of the table from you. And you want to know I'm good at it. So what she showed was what was good for her was connected to what's good for the organization. Okay.
Yeah, awesome. Is she awesome? I don't know. You know, and on that story, I hire a lot of salespeople. I work in tech, and we sell technology, and I always evaluate how good are they at closing me, right? So I think it's very important to, you know, you want to hire people that have those skills. So when we do this workshop with sort of smaller groups, we often make sure you have a negotiation in your mind you're working on. So today we're going to do it with sort of little case studies, and we're going to have you kind of work in teams to think about it really quickly, though, because we don't have a lot of time. So I'm going to run through Isabel. So here's the story with Isabel. She's a manager at a manufacturing company, and she was asked to help out on a project, and this project was really highly visible in the company. There was sort of risk to revenue, to client satisfaction, and their reputation, and she kind of was the fixer. So she came in, she kind of saved the day, and she got a praise for doing that. And then what happened was she continually is asked to help out. So other departments kind of got wind of how great she did on this project, and other people are calling her and asking her to help on a continual basis. Now, she gets a thrill out of kind of being the fixer and helping out. I think a lot of us have that instinct, right? And she likes the exposure that the CEO on down kind of knows how good she is at it. But it's taking up a lot of time. She still has another job she's supposed to be doing, right? So now she's kind of doing two jobs because she's being pulled in this other direction. So she's kind of decided she really likes this work and she wants to formally expand her role to include helping these other teams. But in order to do that, she really thinks she should, you know, get a promotion, maybe a title, definitely some resources to help her do these two jobs, right? And so she brings it up to her boss, and her boss says, you're doing a great job, keep doing it, the time's not right to make any changes, right? Great job. Keep going, Isabel, right? So she's sort of at a moment here where she's a little bit at a crossroads, right? So what we want to do is I want to kind of divide the room, and I want you to start thinking about these questions. And we only have a few minutes to do it. So kind of turn to your neighbor, either groups of two or four. And this lane here, I want you to think about what my mom just kind of explained to you. How is Isabel getting in her own way? Okay, so turn to yourselves and start thinking about that. In this section of the room, what is Isabel's value? And it's a big section. What is Isabel's value? What does she bring into this organization? And what are some ways she can make it visible? Because it's, you know, they said, no, you don't need a promotion right now. And over here on this lane, what are some of her alternatives? Her boss already said no. So what are some of her alternatives for herself if she really can't get her boss to agree, which at this moment he has not agreed? Okay? So you've got about 2 to 3 minutes to kind of talk amongst yourselves, and then we'll yell out the answers. Ready? Okay. Fast. You do have a lot of time, but that's okay. You're all brilliant women, and you figured it out. So yell out a couple ways that Isabel's getting in her own way. Yell it loud.
She's saying yes.
She's saying yes. Yep, she's saying yes. She likes it, right? She's trained her colleagues that she likes to do it, and she's sort of trained her boss that she can do two jobs, right? So she is definitely getting in her own way, right? And the other thing is, it's invisible. He doesn't actually know how much work it is, right? He's not doing the work. He might not even be in the chain of ask, right? Nobody's asking him. This boss is a him, by the way. Okay. he said no. Okay. What is her value? Yell it out. What's her value? And how can she make it visible, you guys? She's saving money because they didn't have to hire somebody else. She fixed a problem. She's capable. I mean, she's doing a great job. He keeps saying, great job, Isabel. Unfortunately, who cares, right? So what we say, and what, you know, I think my mom would say, is she really has to cost her contribution. She has to make that money saving or the what would it cost to hire somebody to do this. But a whole nother person is probably going to cost more than her raise, right, her promotion. What's the cost if I don't help, right? So I think that's the other thing is I keep helping, and there's risk to the organization if I don't help, and it's risk all the way up to the CEO, right? So the CEO knows that there's risk to the organization, right? Now, how does she make it visible? You guys are how does she make it visible?
And how that saved the company in expenses and how it increased the revenue.
Mm-hmm. So report it out. Certain people care.
Yeah.
Exactly. This is great. And we don't have a ton of time, so we cut a couple key tips, but allies. Other people can negotiate for you in a different way than you can negotiate for yourself. These other teams know she's doing good work and need her help. So that's a great one, right? The other thing is I like to just say, her boss doesn't know this is happening, so make sure they're asking her boss too. CC him on every ask, or forward the ask to him, right? He has no idea how much work this is, and it has no value yet in a currency he understands. And you guys, what are her alternatives if she can't get him to negotiate? Stop doing it. That's that's just like, hey Jane, it's your job. Bobby, sorry, I can't help. So stop doing it. Are there other alternatives?
Negotiate with the people who are asking what they can do for her. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I think the other thing is, again, bringing in her boss and saying, I really do want to help, but I need your help in prioritizing this work. So let's have all the asks funnel through you, and then you help. We'll sit down weekly and decide what I should be working on. And that's all of a sudden becomes his problem, right? Yeah. Great. We want it to be his problem, or he's not going to sit down. So, you know, to close the loop on Isabel, she did ultimately get her boss to agree to restructure the department, and she got that promotion and some resources under her. But I think, you know, so yay for Isabel. She did a great job negotiating ultimately. But I think the other thing that we like to say is that you don't want to say no, right? You want to say yes and. And one of the reasons is because you might actually find what you're really passionate about at work about. If you sort of help in another department, you might get that chance to see something you love. And then you want to make sure you've sort of set the table for yourself to go do that work, right? So Isabel, maybe think about how you've sort of had this kind of same situation but asked to help out. So we want to close kind of this section with a few tips. So my mom already said it, but it bears repeating. An ask is always an opportunity to negotiate. You know they need something done. They've asked you for help. Always think of that as a negotiation. And I see all of you writing, and I love that. Okay, second, when someone asks you to help, you are in a good bargaining position because you know they need the work done. Right? Now, I think that, did they fall over your desk? They just happened to, like, you're the first person they found? That's not usually why. It's either because you've trained them that you're going to say yes or because you're really good at it. Either way, you are in a good bargaining position, so never just say yes. Yes and think about what that and is.
Okay. So the next thing we want to talk about is anchoring with options. Here's a little cartoon. Good news, you've just been promoted to VP and relocated to East Bamako. And he says yes, but is really thinking no. Okay, so one of the things that we always talk about anchoring with options is that when you raise an issue at work to negotiate about, it's typically raising a problem. And if you don't have solutions, you become the problem. So you always want to come in with solutions. So the way to think about this is, you know, this is sort of classic negotiation theory, focusing on interests, what matters to you, what matters to them, and then coming up with creative options. And the way I like to bring this home is by telling the story of my husband, Elizabeth's father, and my vacation. We've been married for many, many years, and we go on vacation together. So here's what matters to me when I go on vacation. I like to go to exotic places, live in the lap of luxury. The only decision I want to make about food is by looking at a menu, and I love to go shopping. My husband is a fly fisherman and a birder. He doesn't like to go to any place where he doesn't speak the language. That limits us a little bit. He doesn't mind looking at a menu for dinner, but if he sees the price of breakfast, it ruins his vacation. He wants to go, I always like to say, the places he likes to go, the more bugs and mosquitoes, the better for him. And needless to say, he hates shopping. So how do we go on vacation? So these principles are really important. Simple trades. Trade on time. If you can't reach an agreement in this time period, you can agree to something in this time period and return for something the next. I say, okay, we'll go to Montana this summer. Next year, we're going to Berlin. Okay, you make a trade on time. And although this is facetious in terms of vacation, these are really good principles. The second one is getting paid in other currency. You can't reach agreement on what you want to do, but there's something else that you can get. So I say to my husband, okay, I'll go with you to Montana. We come back. I'm buying a new car. I actually need one. Okay? Other currency.
The most important. That's expensive currency.
What's that?
That's expensive currency.
It's expensive currency. The other thing is contingent agreements, and contingent agreements are really important. They're really important for you to use because they're based on people's different beliefs about the future. So I say to my husband, okay, when we go to these places, he hires fly fishing guides, and they're expensive. I say to him, you catch fish, no problem. If you don't catch fish, I'm going shopping, and I'm going to buy a piece of jewelry equivalent to the price of the fly fishing guide. Now, why does he make the deal? Because he wakes up at the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning, says, today's my day. I'm a social scientist. 60 to 70% of the time, he does not catch fish, and I get a lot of jewelry. That is a very facetious story, but different beliefs about the future are the basis for trades. Trades are really important. And finally, there are ways in which you can, you know, incorporate all issues. So a few years ago, I was asked to go teach in Australia. They speak English in Australia. It was exotic, but they speak English, so he could go. I had to prepay for everything. He never could see the price of breakfast. The birding and fishing was great, and so was the shopping. So it was a way to accommodate all of those things. I just want to say, one of the important things in negotiations and anchoring with options is thinking about trades. If I do this, then what are you going to do? You try to make it reciprocal. You never just give something. So let me just tell you a little trade story, and then I'll turn it over to Elizabeth for a case. It's about an anthropologist who studies the Navajo, and she's in Arizona, and she's driving back to the airport in Tucson. And she passes a Navajo woman at the side of the road, and she asks her if she'd like a ride. And the woman says yes, gets in the car, very silent, doesn't say anything. And finally, she says to the driver, she notices a brown paper bag in between the two seats. And she says, what's that? And the anthropologist said, it's a bottle of wine I got for my husband. And the Navajo woman says, good trade.
Awesome. Okay. Okay, great. All right, so when I was telling you in the beginning about reasons women leave, and a lot of you said you wanted sort of flexible arrangements, how many of you have negotiated at work for a flexible arrangement? So good for you. Awesome. So this case is about that. So those of you who haven't, think about what you want to ask for. So this is Anna, and she is a human resources representative, and she's been at the company for 4 years, and she just had her second child. And she wants to work fewer hours on an alternative schedule, but she still wants to work at this company. And her boss, an HR manager, resists these kinds of situations, and her boss also is a mother and did not use these types of arrangements when she was coming up in the world. And this boss really thinks that, you know, HR is best when everybody's sort of around and available, and so she really wants people in the office. So, you know, to, a little bit to save on time, I'm going to talk through what we think Anna's interests are and her boss's interests. So obviously Anna's interests are flexibility. She really wants to keep this job. She likes this job, and she wants to perform really well. She doesn't really want to be mommy-tracked and put on uninteresting assignments. She wants to be seen as a full participant, but she does want a flexible schedule. She really doesn't want that to detract from any perception of her or her career at this company. And her boss, you know, she really wants high performance from her team. She wants people in the office, so she's big on FaceTime. And she's kind of risk averse, and she doesn't want to set a precedent, right? You know, a lot of bosses are worried about, if I do this for you, what about the rest of the team? So, thinking about, you know, my mom negotiating with my dad for vacations and all those stories, I want you guys all to turn to your teams, and everybody's going to answer kind of the same question, which is, what are some creative options she can propose to her boss to get her boss to agree to this? So 1 to 2 minutes, talk amongst yourselves.
Good.
That Anna has.
Work from home.
Propose work from home. So her boss has resisted that a little bit. So it's there, but it's a good idea. Yeah. Absolutely. Are there technical ways we can accommodate this? You need me to be at the meeting.
Early mornings or late afternoons.
Meaning where her flex is.
Uh-huh.
Be available. Okay. She could provide, that's great. I don't know if anybody could hear you, but so basically maybe she can help spread the workday out so she's available in the morning for people and in the evening for people when the rest of the people are available. Great.
Yes.
Great idea. That's great. And we're going to talk about that a little bit. Take on something else as a trade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I want to get somebody maybe in that section of the room. In the back?
Yep.
Great. Okay. Trial. And last one.
She can do her homework and come back with statistics on how the program can be successful.
That's great. I love that. So exactly. So you guys came up with a lot of great ones. So a pilot is great. And one of the reasons a pilot is great, and my mom has taught me this over the years, is often you put a pilot in place. Let's try this for 6 months. Let's make sure we have metrics, right? What is it I'm going to be measured on? So everybody's clear on what, how I'm going to be evaluated during this pilot. But then, like, inertia takes over, and sometimes it's like people forget it was a pilot. And all of a sudden, you're doing a work schedule and, like, whatever, right? So pilots are great. And also, you know, that sort of trade on time, you know, it depends on when you bring this conversation up. But, you know, maybe you only need it for a certain period of time, right? You need it when the baby is a certain age before you want to put them in preschool, right? It's not forever. I love this. Being available at key times. Technology is huge. I worked at a tech company, and my prior tech company, a woman wanted to do the same thing, but we wanted to make sure she could be there for meetings. They got this iPad on like a rolling stick, right? And she would just like wheel into the room. You know, it was just her face. Came up in the room, and I would talk to the iPad, and it was Skype. So there are a ton of technology advances. And I think the other thing that you brought up, is that you know, this is a little risky, but you can raise this in the organization, maybe raise it up a level and not make it about you, and make it about how are we gonna help families, right? How are we gonna help dads and moms and other people who need accommodations in these ways? Maybe it's not about me, it's about what kind of company we wanna be and how do we wanna support working families, right? So then it isn't about her. So, great, I'm gonna turn it back over.
Okay. So one of the issues is that I always like to say we're the heroines of our own stories. So, you know, I know you totally agree that it's such a great project. I need more people on my team. And the boss is saying, really? And thinking, you know, I actually don't really agree. What I always like to say is we always think
click.
Of our... Sorry?
It didn't click.
Oh. I forgot to click. Okay. What I always like to say is, you know, we always think of ourselves as being strategic, seeing the big picture, being flexible and collaborative. And we see the other person as opportunistic, short-term thinkers, rigid and uncooperative. They won't give us what we want, that's because they're this way. And I always like to say, you know, nobody wakes up in the morning and looks at him or herself in the mirror and says, I'm rigid and uncooperative and a short-term thinker. We all think that we're strategic. And so the important thing is understanding people's good reasons for saying no to you. And the good reasons from them being strategic, thinking of the organization's best interests. Those five good reasons are what I call the hidden agenda of all negotiations. They're sitting there. And if you understand what they are, you can build them into your proposals, you can build them into the process. The second thing is knowing what you know about the person you're dealing with. How do they like to hear things? Because it really makes it, and I think women are just great at that. I mean, we pay attention to those kinds of cues. So here's a story I always like to tell. I was sitting with somebody at dinner, a managing director of a company, and he said to me, you know, I never negotiate salary. And I said, how come? He said, because when I give people an offer, it's fair. And if they were to negotiate with me, the implication would be, I'm not fair. People don't do that. You know, I lead the company. He said, but one time, I gave a woman an opportunity to grow a major piece of business. And she said to me, you know, Jack, in order to grow this piece of business, I'm going to have to hire people who are paid more than I am. And it's going to impact my ability to get this new initiative off the ground. And I think there are two really nice stories, nice points about that. One is, she knew what she knew about him. She couldn't say, the salary for X is this, because that would imply that he wasn't fair. But the other thing that she did, which was really important, is she connected what was good for her to what was good for the organization. Just like the Sheryl Sandberg story, this is also a story about that. I just want to tell you one little story. We do, in programs that I do, we do role plays. And we videotape these role plays. And in one program that we did, we videotaped the women. And then we gave them some more content and videotaped them again. And in the first set of videos, it was all me, 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 me. Here's what I need, here's why I need it, here's why it's to be good for me. In the second one, they started out by saying, you know, the CEO is talking about cutting costs, and my idea for this fits with that. connecting what's good for you to what's good for the organization really helps people hear what you're asking for.
Excuse me. And I'll tell you a quick story about me. When I negotiated for flex time, and I was negotiating with the CEO. He was recruiting me from another company, and it was pre-Series A funded tech startups. You know what I know about that organization? They have no money, right? And so I wanted a flex schedule, and so I said, the way you can afford me is I'm not going to work full time. So it was like a gift to him. And it works, you know, and that's how, and I actually don't work full time for my company right now as a way to connect what's good for me, which is a more flexible schedule, so I can do this work with her, and not as much salary. So it is very important, and I know this person, I knew he would respond to that. So we're gonna just go back to Anna really quickly, because we have to really, what she did was she really understood her boss. She'd been there for 4 years, so she knows her boss really well, and she knows this company well. And so she has to think very carefully, and I think we underestimate this work, that you have to think very carefully about what are their good reasons for saying no. And team members without children are going to feel burdened. That is a good reason for saying no to somebody who says, I have children, I need flexibility, right? You're going to miss important meetings. That's a good reason for saying no to somebody who says, I don't want to be in the office every day. You know, we know this boss really likes people there, and so the idea of I'm going to work from home, you have to be careful about that proposal because we know that this boss is likely to say no to that. That is not something she's likely to say yes to. You know, the idea that other people have to pick up the slack, either the supervisor has to be available when you're not available or your teammate has to be available. And then, you know, finally knowing that this woman didn't have a flex schedule at all when she was coming up with children is just something to realize, right? That she's going to sort of say, you can do it, I did it, right? In her mind, maybe. And so, you know, I think the thing to think about here is you can use these as the opener. I know you're worried about people not being available for certain key meetings. Here's my proposal, that I either make sure those days I am in the office or we use a technology like Skype to make a video conferencing to make sure I'm there. So you can use that reason for saying no as the opener if you know them well and if you've done your homework. And so again, just closing the loop on Anna, she got them to agree to a pilot, a 6-month pilot with measurable objectives, and they sort of forgot it was a pilot. Right? And she was able to have sort of flexible schedule for longer. So let's close this section with some tips. So we like to say always have at least two proposals, because then it makes it less of a yes-no. I'd like to work from home. No. Okay, you're done. Right? But if you kind of open with what you know about them and you propose either I'd like to make sure I'm available for these meetings or maybe we use Skype, you've actually expanded that conversation away from a yes-no to something they need to consider. Really consider their needs and what they are like, and really know what their good reasons are for saying no. That will be, this is the homework you need to do going into this negotiation.
Go ahead.
Yeah? What'd you say?
No.
Oh,
tell
okay.
us about time. We're going to take a few more minutes.
All right, we're running out of time, but we're good. All right, we're going to move to deal with resistance, which
yep.
you need to hear because
okay.
you're going to have some.
Okay. You know, so the thing is, this is a resistance. So when I ask for something, you're actually asking people to change something. And so you can expect what I call offensive moves. They can question your competence. They can question your ideas, criticize your style, appeal for sympathy. This is the killer. Don't ask me for this. I really need your help on this, right? Or flatter, you're so good at this. Why wouldn't you be doing it for X number of hours? And our tendency is to respond with a counter move. Somebody says, you're not ready for this position. You say, yes, I am. And so the problem is you've kept the situation in the same way. So you want me to start Rosalie? Tell a story.
Okay. Rosalie, she is a PhD, and she's a junior researcher. She's been there for a while, and she's done this. She's had a great year, and she's got this great research, and she wants to present this research at this major conference, but her boss only has senior people present at the conference. So here's the role play. It's going to be hard for me to see. Let me read it here. Mm-hmm. So essentially, she says, because we're going to role play this twice really fast, I've come to talk to you about funding to present at the next international conference. I just published this important work in this journal, Agricultural Economics, and I want to present it. And he says, I'm not familiar with that journal. But as you know, our senior people present at these conferences. And that's where we meet donors. And you're not ready. So you're not ready. That's great. I can't believe you're saying that I'm not ready to present. Look, I need you to support the work here. You're really great at helping us get ready for these conversations with these donors, right? So you're like our support staff. There's no way I'm just going to help you present my data. This is my research. I need to be there too. And he says, don't get upset. She says, I'm not upset.
Right? Okay. All right. So another approach that I always like to talk about, whoopsie, what happened?
Just keep going, because I didn't go.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is to shift the turns. And there are ways to shift turns. There are several approaches that you can use. Sorry, let me get my notes here, even though I know them. Okay. The first one is to question. So somebody says you're not ready for this, you can correct it. I can see why it might seem that way, but here's what I did. Or they question your ideas, this will never work. You can divert it, a diverting turn. What would be a reasonable idea? They appeal for sympathy, I really need your help. You can use a question. What really concerns you? How can I help? They flatter you, so good at this, why wouldn't you want to work 80 hours a week? You can use a role reversal. If you were in my shoes, what would you do? And they say, don't get so upset. A really important turn is to just sit there and say nothing, right? Move your papers around, get up, walk around. Don't get into that kind of thing, because then they have to fill in, and they do not want to talk about why you're upset. Okay.
Okay. All right, so I'm not gonna read the beginning. The beginning, the opener is exactly the same, and he says, you know, I need you to support. And she says, help me understand the criteria you use to determine when someone is ready to speak at conferences. And he says, well, we need our most senior people. You're really good at this support work, right? And she says, oops, I understand that. This project is a priority, and I want to support you. So she agrees with him, and he says, I'm glad you understand that. But then she says, since I know the data best, I think the best way to support the project is for me to do the presentation and be available to answer questions that donors have. That could also help donors have confidence in our junior researchers, right? And he says, I think that would work, right? So she, you know, really helps, first of all, she anticipates, right, that he's going to say no. Maybe because she already had that negotiation. It's okay to try the negotiation more than once, right? If you go back home and you prepare for the second time, now you know what their response is going to be. So she anticipates that, and she also asks him a question. What is ready? Because what does ready mean? That's not fair, right? So what would it take for somebody to be ready? So final tips here. You have to expect resistance. Use what you know about them to think ahead, but expect also some resistance you didn't plan for. So if you think ahead, you think you know what they're going to say, that helps you come prepared with turns. And I think, those turns are really important. Questions, right? A turn, like a question. Don't rise to that bait. If they say you're upset, sit. If you're getting upset, take a pause on the negotiation. It's always okay to say, I need to think a little bit about this. Can we meet on this again tomorrow? It's okay to take a break. You don't want to negotiate from a position of, you know, inflammation or being upset.
Okay. We're rushing to end here. So these are our final thoughts.
Final thoughts.
Okay. So what I thought I would do is try to put together what we've talked about and connect it to negotiating what you're worth, because everybody's worried about that. How do you get paid? So figure out what you want. You can't get what you want if you don't know what you want, and money is not the only issue. So think about the other things that are important. Aspire high. Learn as much as you can. The more information that you have about what other people get, the easier it is to aspire high. And if you aspire high, aspirations become self-fulfilling prophecies. And if you have good information, you can stand behind what you're asking for. Take stock of your strengths. Find ways to make your value visible in a way to show your worth. Develop alternatives. Other offers help determine your worth, but you have to use them very carefully. You don't say, if I don't get this, I'm going there. That's a threat. Doesn't work. Be firm on your knees, but flexible on means. Think in terms of packages. Never negotiate about a single issue. Understand their constraints. What are their 5 good reasons for saying no to you? Act appreciatively. Here's a very important piece of finding. You'll do better if they like you. and make turns to deal with resistance. Be prepared for tough questions and anticipate the challenges. And finally, stay with it. Know maybe just the beginning. You can always come back. So we have time for questions.
It was sort of a rush at the end. Go back. We have to go back because they want to take a picture or write it down.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you want to do the questions?
So there are microphones right there.
Yeah.
So go, you know, if you have a question, go to the mic, I think is the way to do it. They're all like taking pictures. Any questions? Yeah, you want to ask the first question?
What's the biggest mistake you can make while negotiating?
So what's the biggest mistake you can make while negotiating?
Well, so I think it's a mistake that we make because we don't negotiate. And if we don't negotiate, we train people to expect that we won't, right? And then it becomes harder. So you want to think about it. You want to have it part of your DNA. You know, it's not about just at salary time. It's everything. Anytime people offer you an opportunity, what's the yes and, you know? What do you need? So think about what you need makes you more likely to negotiate.
Yeah. Other questions?
Yeah. It's very bad to use other information directly. What it makes, having the other information means that when you ask for something, you can stand behind it. So somebody pushed back and says, this is too much. You know, I'm not sure. It seems like, you know, I could do better. I just want to tell you a story about this. There's a woman, I do work at Time Warner, and this was a woman, she was in the movie business. She was passed over for vice president. She came, then the higher vice president didn't like the person that gave the job to her. She takes the offer, ready to take the offer. She meets a friend of hers who's in business affairs, and he says to her, you know, people in that job get paid $25,000 more than they have offered you. So she goes back, and she said, I think we need to talk more about this offer. I'm not okay with it. You know, she has the cards, right? They want her. They just had a failed vice president. They want her. They offer a little bit more. She goes back to her friend. He said, I told you, $25,000 more. And she goes and she asks for it and she gets it. She doesn't say, I know from my friend. It just makes her stay in the negotiation.
Yeah.
She doesn't say yes. She says, you know, I think we need to keep talking. You have to have ways to make the conversation go, but you never, never use that external information directly. The research says it counts against you, and it particularly counts against women.
Yeah.
You know it, it makes you comfortable asking for it. And if they say, we can't give it to you, then say, let's structure a way that I can get it, right? Something now for something later. So it's really important to have that external information. The research suggests if you have the same, if you have good information, differences between men and women as negotiators disappears. It's the access to information that makes the biggest difference in terms of how successful you are asking for
a conversation. And also, I mean, I think there are so many resources now to find out what, if you were to go back on the job market, what you would be eligible for. And again, you don't have to lay that on the table. You certainly don't have to tell them, I have another job offer. But it just gives you that confidence because that data is freely available. They can also look it up. You know, someone with this much experience, with this, you know, with this degree, is generally making this. So, you know, another question.
How can you strategically give your offer? Because we always know whoever gave your card, show your card first, most likely you're not going to get what you ask for.
So you know, there's an idea about that. That's true in certain kinds of negotiation.
So the question, just to repeat the question, like how do you give your own offer? Do you anchor yourself with a number? Is that essentially sort of like how do you get what you want without sort of giving all your cards away?
Right. So, you know, the research success is three things. If you have good information about what the other side is willing to give, then you make an opening offer. If you don't, you let them do it. If neither one does it, you make an extreme offer. But that's just about the kind of negotiation like buying a car or negotiating just a single issue on price. That is not the correct thing. I actually think this anchoring with options is really important. You can always, you know, so you're not just asking for pay, you're asking for a package. And you put it out there and you say, you know, this is what I think I'd like to talk about. It's a place to get started. So you use some kind of language that suggests some flexibility. But if you don't have good information, and if you're negotiating salary for a large company, they know so much more than you do. But what you're trying to do is never just negotiate about salary. You right. want to think what else you want. So you locate it in a total package. You know, what kind of performance, when do you get performance reviews? Oh, can you go to, what do they do for development? You know, how do people interface as their team? How does the team work? You want to not just talk about the one issue. Anchoring with options means many more right. things. And also, if you put out two, as Elizabeth said, it changes the dynamic. Right. I could do it this way, or I could do it this way. And then you've really framed the negotiation.
And I think I would say one thing. I mean, remember, this is not just about that one time. It's really about your career, right? And sometimes you're negotiating with a lot more information than you think because you work there already. And so what are the things that are beneficial at this company that you can add to your discussion? Again, flex time, plum projects.
Right.
You know, lots of things about your work besides just salary. And I think that's part of the problem with this. A lot of the stuff you'd find on the web about negotiating, it's all about salary. And really, I think our point of view is you should be constantly laying the groundwork for what you want next in your career at this workplace, which right. is about way more than salary. And that is really important. I think a missed opportunity for a lot of women. I'll tell one quick story. So at this current job, I don't manage this team, but a man and a woman started the same week in the same team. And a month before their year review, the guy started asking for his raise. And he started sort of saying, this is what the market says I should be making. I've been doing good work. And the woman said nothing. And so at the management team, when we're thinking about what raises are we going to give, you know, he is the squeaky wheel. And obviously research says women squeaky wheels, they get, you know, that's not a great thing to be. But the fact that she said nothing, then she wasn't even necessarily on the table for a promotion, right, or a raise. And he had sort of forced his way onto the table. When I met with her and I said, we're going to offer you a promotion, it's been a year, or a salary increase, it's been a year, she said, great, how'd I do in the negotiation? And you did nothing. You did nothing for this negotiation. I did it all on your behalf, right? So remember that you are laying the groundwork every day for what you want at work and how they perceive your value.
Right. There's another important part of that story. Elizabeth did it on her behalf. There are people who can do things on your behalf. Allies that can help you in ways that you might not even know.
Because if she wasn't asking, so she was going to be passed over.
Okay.
Right?
So I just want to end with one story. I think we're out of time. We'll be at the book signing. We'll stay here for a little bit, too. And a lot of people left, so I'm rewarding you with my best story, those of you who stayed. Okay? It's about a woman who's on a flight. She's on a trans-Pacific flight, and the pilot comes on, and she says, I'm Mary Jones. I'm your pilot. And our passenger has never been on a trans-Pacific flight piloted by a woman. So she calls over the flight attendant and she says, I am so excited that this plane is being piloted by a woman. And the flight attendant says, not only is the pilot a woman, the co-pilot is a woman, and the first engineer is a woman. So our passenger said, that is so exciting. Do you think when we land, I could go to the cockpit and tell them how excited I am about this? And the flight attendant says, we don't call it the cockpit anymore.
So maybe I'm going to leave it alone.